All right. Hey, it's Kathy. How are you?
What a week.
I know. Well, this will be our first podcast, so I'll just kind of start, and then we'll just chat, right? You're doing a podcast, aren't you? Are you doing podcasts?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do a radio show every Monday, and then we podcast that as well. So.
Okay. Yeah, well, we're going to be doing podcasts and videos both, and see how that all plays together and everything. So anyway, okay, well, I'll just go ahead and get started. Oh, wait a minute. It's Engage Arizona. Tell me you'll have... Well, hello. I want to welcome everyone to the first inaugural podcast for Engage Arizona. Politics for Daily Life. Okay, I'll start that again. I want to welcome everyone to the inaugural podcast of Engage Arizona Daily... Public Policy for Daily Life. Okay, I'll do it a third time. Usually I don't take this long.
No problem.
I want to welcome everyone to the inaugural podcast of Engage Arizona, Public Policy for Daily Life. We're very excited to launch this series. And for the first series, I'm going to be chatting with my colleague from California, Jonathan Keller. And Jonathan is the president of the California Family Council. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thanks so much, Kathy. Great to be with you and the wonderful people from Arizona.
Well, and I want to say that Jonathan is one of the, I will say, bright stars and really sharp directors of what we call family policy councils. We are part of a loose-knit family policy council network throughout the country, and we've got so many promising up-and-coming leaders all under the age of 40, and Jonathan is one of those, and I've just learned so much from Jonathan. How long have you been in the position at California Family Council?
I started on the board back in 2012, but then I joined as a staff member as the president and CEO part-time for the transition October 2013 and full-time in January 2014. So it was it's coming up on 5 years.
Right, yeah. Well, it's been just an incredible ride. Let's just start with share a little bit about your background and why you do what you do.
Well, absolutely. So I'm a mostly lifetime resident of California, other than the stint at the first 2 years of my life when I lived in Kansas. I was actually born in Wichita, Kansas, but came out to California fairly quickly after that. And from early part of my life, I lived in Fresno, then did some time in Sacramento, and then back to Fresno to work for a pro-life organization. After I graduated high school, started there in 2003, and for 11 years I was first the youth director, then the executive director for Right to Life Central California, and I really just had a heart for a long time for the pro-life issue. That was kind of what got me involved first as a volunteer and then as a staff member in kind of the culture war issues. And it's been kind of an interesting ride to see the development of the pro-life movement nationally and especially in California these last 15 years. And after 2013, when I started with California Family Council full-time, God opened up some opportunities to get involved in all sorts of other issues. Obviously, there's a lot of the same issues that CAP fights alongside with defending God's design for life, marriage, and family, and religious liberty. So obviously it's been interesting to see how California and Arizona have kind of taken pretty different approaches to these issues over the last several decades. So I'm grateful for what you guys are doing and keeping the torch alive, and hopefully we'll get it through our thick skulls one day.
Well, and I can remember years where we were like California, where we could not get anything through, and so I just so appreciate and admire you being willing to carry the torch in California. 5 years is a long time, and we certainly hope that you're there a lot longer. Before we get into some of the specifics, I just have to ask you, you're a new dad, and how has being a dad been, how has it changed your outlook on things or your passion and your commitment?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I know you hear people say a lot of times that when you become a parent, when you become a father or a mother, it really does give you a new perspective, and that certainly is the case. I'll just give you a really kind of basic example. For me, I was homeschooled K through 12, and in a lot of ways, my wife was also homeschooled K through 12. So we're both kind of thinking about the values of homeschooling. And frankly, I mean, a little bit of a true confession. I was maybe a little bit a little bit calloused, maybe a little bit, dismissive of public school and thinking, it's a lost cause. It's hopeless. Why are we even going to bother trying to reform public school? But now being a new dad and just thinking of all those kids who are in some way, through no fault of their own, I won't say trapped, but they don't have an option to do something other than public school. And it's really looking at my son Hudson, who's 9.5 months old. It's made me just remember that God cares about all kids. He cares about kids whether they're homeschooled or private schooled or public schooled. He cares about them whether they live in Arizona or California. He cares about them whether they're born or unborn. And it really is just a reminder to stand up and fight and to love our neighbors, even those that disagree with us politically. We can't give up, and we can't just say, we'll let this part of the culture, go by the wayside, go to hell in a handbasket. We really have to lovingly, respectfully, but forcefully fight to defend life, family, and liberty for everybody.
That's so true. And in Arizona, I've often said that we want to support parents in what their educational choice is, and we don't want to make a value statement. We try very hard to not make a value statement about what they should be doing on how they educate their children. But, a popular refrain in Arizona increasingly is, "Don't California my Arizona." I'm so sorry, but that, and I've heard that from some other states as well, and we certainly have a lot of California people moving to Arizona, and so our demographics are changing rapidly. The population is changing and growing, certainly, and so we are seeing more of a California influence in our culture and in our public policy in Arizona. So what's it like? What's public policy engagement like in California at this point?
Well, it's really interesting because, I'll be honest, on the one hand, it's very frustrating. You look, for example, at some of the crazy bills that we have both passed in the past and ones that we are fighting currently. Some of them are just silly when it comes to issues of personal freedom, outside the scope of what we talk about, whether it's taxation or different regulations and licenses and things like that. But other ones, it's not just the common joke about California is it's the land of fruits and nuts. Some of them are not just kind of funny and humorous and, make you chuckle. Some of them really are dangerous. And, we saw as an example, one of those laws that California Family Council was heavily involved in opposing was AB 775. This was a bill from 2015 that would have forced every pregnancy center in the state of California to in some way promote a message that was in favor of state-sponsored abortion. And I want to make sure people understand, I didn't misspeak. I do mean state-sponsored abortion. California is one of the only states in the nation that actually takes taxpayer money and uses it directly to pay for surgical and chemical abortions. This bill would have told licensed pregnancy centers, those ones that have gone to the trouble of becoming medically certified and a doctor on staff, having an ultrasound technician, those centers would have actually had to post huge notices, essentially use the walls of their clinics as billboards to promote the message that you can get a government-sponsored abortion. And it really is unconscionable. I cannot believe that every Democrat on the Judiciary Committee and on the Health Committee voted for this bill. It was a strict party line vote, despite over 100 pregnancy care center staff members and volunteers and mothers with their children coming and showing up at the hearing. However, I will say this is an area where I want to give God the glory and really be grateful. That bill ultimately over the last 2.5 years made its way through the court system. Our good friends at Alliance Defending Freedom, Dr. Michael Ferris himself actually argued that case in March at the U.S. Supreme Court, and as your listeners I'm sure know, we just received a huge victory on Tuesday the 26th with the NIFLA v. Becerra ruling. By 5-4, California's law was overturned, and that obviously is hugely gratifying for us. We're so happy, but at the same time, it was incredible for me to see the response of the legislators in Sacramento. They were not contrite. They were not remorseful. They were not humbled in any way. The co-authors of the bill held a press conference, and Assemblywoman Autumn Burke from the L.A. area actually said, well, the court has just fired a shot across our bow, so it's up to us to fire three more right back. So apparently we're going to be back at this for round two, maybe as early as next legislative cycle, but, you know, it's the battle never ends, and that's why we have to keep fighting.
Well, and to talk about the NIFLA case for a minute, that's what great way to fight and great way, again, our friends, our really good friends at Alliance Defending Freedom, because that ruling impacts all of us. And so just the ability to that we had pregnancy centers, obviously, to fight that, the role that you played, we all signed amicus briefs to go before the U.S. Supreme Court, and that's where it's another example of we have to fight at every stage. So you fighting in the state legislature, the pregnancy center standing up to protect their rights, going through the legal system, and then we get a tremendous victory on that says the government cannot compel speech, and I think that's going to could impact potentially a number of different areas.
Oh, absolutely, and this is one of the areas applying it now to the current fight that we're in with this legislative cycle. We are facing a really severe threat from a bill called AB 2943. It's essentially a LGBT counseling ban. It would tell LGBT people who are struggling with unwanted same-sex attraction that it is fraudulent for them to go and ask a therapist to help them with their unwanted same-sex attraction. I mean, I'll give you an example. Let's say that you have two Catholic priests. They both graduate seminary at the same time. And after being in ministry for a couple of years, you know, they're both at the same parish. One of them finds himself being attracted to women, and he says, you know, I want to fulfill my priestly vows. I want to stay celibate, and that's how I believe I can serve God. That priest who's attracted to women could go to a counselor, go to a paid therapist, a licensed therapist, and get help with that counseling, with that issue that they wanted to talk about. But if a brother priest, one who graduated seminary at the same time, was serving in the same parish, goes to his therapist and says, you know, I want to serve the Lord. I know what God says about having sex outside of marriage, and I'm feeling attracted to a man. That therapist would not be able to help that person. Literally, the only difference is the orientation or the attraction of the person. Obviously, I mean, it's a huge violation of the freedom of speech, the freedom of association, the right to seek counseling that brings true happiness and joy. But I think the NIFLA case, because of its ruling on forbidding compelled speech and barring free speech, our friends at ADF have actually said they think this could be a huge bonus, a huge victory, kind of hidden within the case would be that it strikes down the bans on counseling, not just in California, but even in other states around the nation.
Well, and let me mention that what we have in Arizona, the first time that we've had this in Arizona is in Pima County, which is the county that covers Tucson, and that counseling ban goes to counseling minors. But if you were going to counsel a minor to transition to the opposite gender or to be able to accept and live out their same-sex attraction and you know, be involved with persons of the same sex, that's not prohibited by the Pima County ordinance. And so it never goes both ways. But the California proposal, it actually would tell adults that you cannot go get counseling to help you overcome unwanted same-sex attraction or unwanted gender identity issues, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And really, that's what makes it go so much farther than any other ban in the country. We're not talking about, you know, the horror stories that are supposedly paraded out by our friends on the left, that, you know, a 17-year-old young person is being dragged by their parents to a counselor they don't want to see. No, I mean, again, we're talking about, you know, two 30-year-old Catholic priests as an example. One of them who's attracted to women could get counseling. One who's attracted to men could not. We're talking about, a mother of three, a married mother of three, who experiences some postpartum depression with her last child. She goes to a counselor and says, you know, for the first time in my life, I don't know what it is, but I'm having some same-sex attraction. I don't want to leave my husband. I don't want to leave my kids. Can you help me? That counselor would have to look at her in the eye and say, I'm sorry, I can't help you. The state of California says that counseling is a fraud.
Now, Jonathan, I've also heard that it could, like in Arizona, for example, we've had speakers like Sam Alberry and Christopher Yuan over the last couple of months talk about same-sex attraction issues, about their journey out of, Christopher Yuan, about his journey out of homosexuality. I've had some confusion over, would it also prohibit, you know, churches and other organizations like Center for Arizona Policy or California Family Council from hosting speakers to talk about overcoming unwanted same-sex attraction?
Well, that's a great question, and that's part of our real fear. The bill is written so broadly that it criminalizes really any sort of financial transaction. That's the real triggering point. Anytime there is an exchange of money for goods or services, that includes that would be included as fraud. And it wouldn't only apply just to licensed counselors. It wouldn't just be someone who is a licensed clinical social worker or a licensed marriage and family therapist. This could apply to unlicensed people like pastors if there is any sort of financial transaction. You know, if a large church, I know we have a lot of churches like this in California, I'm sure you do there as well in Arizona, churches, if they get big enough, they really want to minister to their community, they may open up a counseling center that has a small paid component, you know, maybe $20 a session or something like that. Or they may host a conference, maybe a marriage retreat, for example, where you talk about God's design for marriage and sexuality. They might host a spiritual retreat for engaged couples, or maybe even just something as simple as a high school youth group retreat. If during the course of that retreat, one of the students says to the group, you know, I'm struggling with same-sex attraction. I know what the Bible says about this. How can you help me? That could potentially put the church at risk of a lawsuit under AB 2943.
So where is it at right now? It's out of committee. Do I have that right, or where is it at?
Yeah, as of right now, and I know we're recording this in late June, and we are actually waiting to see what happens on Monday. It looks like they may have tried to waive the bill out of the Appropriations Committee. And if that's the case, it could go to the Senate floor as early as the first week of July. So we're waiting to see what the results are going to be. At this point, unfortunately, it has just steamrolled through the California legislature. In most cases, it has received all Democrat votes, although sadly, on the assembly floor, there were a handful of Republicans. Some of our much more progressive Republicans from different parts of the state did actually vote in favor of it. The vote out of the assembly, out of an 80-member body, was 50 to 18. We're expecting, unfortunately, probably a similar ratio in the Senate. But again, this is something, you know, it is discouraging on the one hand, but I will say I feel so much better, so much more encouraged with the announcement of Justice Anthony Kennedy retiring. I actually wonder if this is going to make California and other deep blue states rethink their approach, because up until now, I think they've been able to reliably think that they had five justices on the court that were in their pocket, that were really, champions of the sexual revolution, with Justice Kennedy really leading the charge. But with the prospect of a new justice like Samuel Alito or Neil Gorsuch on the court by the October session, I think some of these blue states may really want to reconsider this, because look at AB 775. They overreached. They went farther than any other state in the nation and attacking pregnancy centers. But by God's grace, instead of this being a case that infects the rest of the nation with a pro-abortion, a radical, compelled pro-abortion speech ideology, instead of infecting the rest of the nation, I think we can actually inoculate the rest of the nation. And
well,
I think
that's
sometimes what we have to consider, is sometimes God is going to use things, you know, Romans 8:28, he's going to work all things together for good, even when we don't see how that's going to be the case at certain times.
Well, and the left has so used the courts to accomplish their agenda rather than using the democratic process and going through the public policy process. And so now, yes, through the NIFLA decision, we have a court decision that protects every other state or protects pregnancy centers nationwide from being compelled by the governments in their states to have their speech restricted and controlled. And so that is such a huge win throughout the country. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the left does. And, you know, I can't remember a time in I've been a Supreme Court watcher for a long time, and especially in the month of June when the controversial decisions tend to come down. And when you look at what happened in June, we had freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of association, all affirmed by a U.S. Supreme Court with Kennedy as the swing vote in so many cases for the 30 years now. But to see what happens next when we have a justice who will interpret the law, not make the law, it's going to be something to see. To see how we can try to have this country's public policy processes righted again. Now, before we leave AB 2943, I just want to ask, I assume if it gets out of your Senate and it goes to Jerry Brown, do you think he will sign it?
Well, this is another thing that's interesting. Jerry Brown has sometimes been called, and jokingly, the most effective Republican in Sacramento. And for your listeners, if you're not that familiar with California politics, Jerry Brown is a far-left progressive Democrat. He was elected to two terms of office back in the 1970s, immediately after Ronald Reagan left office and right before. I think his term was 74 through 82,
right,
if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, like at the tender age of 36 or something.
Yes. He was very young, and he was one of the nation's most hard left progressive champions at the time. He earned the nickname back then of Moonbeam, just for some of his crazy policies. And then, even though California has a two-term limit for governors, that term limit policy was not enacted until just a few years ago. And they found, the courts decided that that was not retroactive. So Jerry Brown in 2010 ran for his second set of two terms in 2010. He's been in office and he's termed out this year, but he's been governor for 16 of the last 45 years. And it's been interesting to see, even though I think he is probably about as progressive as he ever was, the Democrat Party, both nationally and in the United and in California, have moved so far to the left that Jerry Brown has actually been seen as kind of a moderating influence on the radicalism of Sacramento Democrats. And last year, we saw him actually veto a bill that had broad support, sadly even bipartisan support in both houses, that was attacking pro-life organizations for codes of conduct. Last year, it would have said that if you're a pro-life organization, a pregnancy center, or you're a policy group like California Family Council or Center for Arizona Policy, or frankly, you're even a church or a Christian school, you could not have a pro-life code of conduct for your employees. If you had a staff member who went out and had an abortion, even if that person was in charge of your youth education for abstinence education, for example, you would not be able to fire that person. Well, remarkably, we were anticipating a court challenge. In fact, we were working that with our friends there at Alliance Defending Freedom on looking for plaintiffs.
Yeah.
Remarkably, with 5 hours left in the legislative cycle, Governor Brown vetoed that bill. And he didn't do it with a lot of fanfare. He was kind of cryptic with his message, but he essentially kind of tipped his hat to say, I think that the current regulations on pregnancy discrimination are sufficient, especially with how they provide carve-outs for religious-based organizations.
Yeah,
so
very good. Yeah.
Jerry Brown does have kind of a remnant of his Jesuit education. He before he went into politics, he considered becoming a priest. I kind of wish he would have gone that route instead.
right.
But you know, you never know. With AB 2943, because of the threat it poses to churches, we're cautiously not holding our breath, but we're hopeful that he might have a replay of last year's surprising veto.
Well, when we talk about this, I mean, you know, people who aren't aware of what's going on in California, they may be listening to this and thinking, oh, my goodness, this is horrific. How can government even think of these things and all of that? So I've got kind of like two questions for you about that. First, share with me, where's the church in California? I mean, do you have pastors rallying to your side? Do you have churches speaking about this? Or is the church silent in California?
Well, you know, it's interesting. In a state of 38 million people, I would say that it's kind of all over the map. You certainly have some pastors and churches that are deeply concerned about some of these issues. I mean, it's hard to believe, but only 10 years ago was when the Church of California really did rise up, stand up, and not only qualified Proposition 8 for the ballot as a citizen ballot initiative with over 1.1 million signatures, but then later that year, November of 2018, the same year that California voted overwhelmingly to elect Barack Obama president, those same voters went farther down their ballot and they voted to define marriage as only between a man and a woman. Remember, that's California.
And that was similar to Arizona. I mean, we voted for McCain because he was the homeboy, but the marriage amendment in Arizona drew a stronger vote than McCain at the top of the ticket here in his home state. So, yeah, we share that experience at least. But then where's the church today, 10 years
well,
later?
Well, I'll be honest. I think that after the California Supreme Court invalidated Prop 8, mm-hmm. and then it was appealed all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court in the infamous Windsor decision authored by Anthony Kennedy in 2013,
right.
I think really, sadly, in a lot of ways, it really took a lot of the energy and the fight out of California pastors and churches. I think they looked at the, you know, judicial usurpation, to use a common phrase, of the people in Washington, D.C., of the Supreme Court. And a lot of pastors I talked to, sadly, said, you know what, what's the use of fighting? Anything we do, even when we win, we ultimately lose because the courts just take it away. But I think that what we've seen just in the last few years, and I think we're going to see this increasing, especially in light of this NIFLA decision, the church, I think, is beginning to realize that God, I think, is doing some neat things nationally. And I know that we obviously never, as the church, we don't ever want to put our trust in princes or in horses or chariots. But at the same time, sometimes God delivers in strange ways, and he reminds us, if you look at the example of Elijah, there is a remnant. There is still a faithful group of people who have not bowed the knee to Baal. And I think that's what a lot of churches now, I think, are realizing, is that we need to maybe change our engagement policy. We need to be loving and gracious to some of our friends that are much more left. But we also need to realize that we don't have to just throw up our hands and go in with the full-blown leftist progressive ideology. And the NIFLA case is a great example of showing how even there are certain things like the First Amendment that are beyond the reach of legislators in Sacramento.
So now my question, okay, so that's the church. How about you and your team? And how do you deal with this where you've got to feel like you're constantly just kind of knocking your head against a brick wall? You've been doing this for 5 years. At times it's a losing battle, but then the Lord brings a great victory, like the NIFLA case. How do you deal with it on a personal level and those that are around you and your board?
Well, I was going to make a joke about happy hour, but I know there's probably some Southern Baptist listening, so I won't say that. But
you are a Southern Baptist.
I know. I'm kind of a wayward Southern Baptist in that regard. But I'm more Catholic when it comes to alcohol, I guess. So, I would say, though, in all seriousness, it is sometimes really frustrating and really discouraging. I mean, there have been some summers. I remember the year of AB 775, 2015, was just a really, really brutal summer, because that year you had had not only AB 775 pass, but that was the year of the amazing work of David DeLeiden. Seeing the incredible undercover videos, many of which were recorded actually not in California, but they implicated, some of them were recorded in California, and they implicated several affiliates of Planned Parenthood and a group called STEM Express out here in Da Vinci Biosciences in California. And it was so frustrating to see all of these other states initiate investigations and really push back on the radicalism of the abortion movement. And California went the exact opposite way. Instead of investigating Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry, our Attorney General at the time, Kamala Harris, initiated an investigation into David. I mean, she raided his home office, seized computers, videotapes, and sent 11 state agents into his little one-bedroom apartment. That was really discouraging. And again, that same year when David was being attacked, we saw AB 775 pass attacking pregnancy centers. We also saw, after seeing an initial victory, we beat assisted suicide in the normal session. But then through parliamentary shenanigans, to be polite, the Democrats in California came back and passed assisted suicide. They rammed it through in an extraordinary special session. And they were able to make that go into effect. 2015 was very difficult. It was discouraging. It was disheartening, and it was frustrating to wonder, okay, God, why are we doing this? What, like you said, maybe we are just banging our head against a brick wall. Is it even worth it? But again, I think we see so often times throughout Scripture where I know it's a cliche. I'm sure many of your listeners have heard that famous quote from Mother Teresa that God doesn't always call us to be successful. He calls us to be faithful. I think that's true. But I also think that sometimes if you lose and you lose and you lose, it can be tough to keep kind of that eternal perspective. And I think that's why it's been really encouraging and valuable just to see the last 3 years. 2016, we saw a massive win with a bill that was attacking Christian colleges and universities. The bill was gutted. 4 of the 5 sections were removed in the last month of the session. That was huge. Last year, we saw the massive veto from Governor Brown, and this year, we see the NIFLA case. So in some ways, I feel like after kind of laboring in the vineyards for these last several years, we're seeing God reward us in some certain ways. Now, I mean, don't get me wrong. We have a long way to go. California is still trying to battle between Massachusetts and Illinois and New York for being the most leftist, most progressive. I guess I should throw Washington State and Hawaii in there as well. But in a lot of ways, I think that there is kind of a groundswell in the state of California. And sometimes it's just up to us to be that light in the darkness. It's up to us to stand firm and to wait and see how God is going to use us. It may not always be a policy victory, but I think sometimes that quiet but bold witness is just what God calls us to do. We've seen that throughout all sorts of other eras of history. And, William Wilberforce, it took him decades till he finally was able to get a vote, an affirmative vote on abolishing the slave trade. And I think that we've seen that with the pro-life movement. We're finally seeing some massive encouraging momentum and success. And I think that's kind of where we're at with California as well. It's a long road, but I think that I think we have some positive momentum.
Well, well said. And my favorite proverb is always, the horse is made ready for the day of battle, but victory belongs to the Lord, and that we're to do our part to be faithful, to be obedient to what God's called us to, and leave the results in His hand. And we're to be active, we're to participate. Everyone can do something to make a difference in what's going on in public policy, certainly to pray. But perseverance is what it's called. In Arizona, we are concerned that there are millions coming into the state this year from the Human Rights Campaign and Planned Parenthood and the national left to really flip Arizona like they flipped Colorado in the past and like they've continued the leftward tilt of California. We've got Arizona politicians going to the Bay Area to raise money for their political campaigns right now. And so we see all of this happening in our state, and knowing that we might, be flipped this year. I mean, we could, it could dramatically change in Arizona, but knowing that, okay, we've had a really nice ride, but we're not going anywhere. And if we end up being the remnant, I mean, hopefully we'll get a reprieve this year, but if we don't, we're still going to be here fighting the good fight and standing for what we believe, because that's certainly what we believe we're called to do. Well, let me, before we close, I just have to ask you about this proposal that's going to be on your ballot to divide California into 3 different states. But would that put you in a conservative state, or would it, all 3 wouldn't be liberal, or would they be?
Well, most likely, yeah. There's been efforts for several years now to try to divide California. This latest one comes from the same person that tried to place a proposal to divide California into 6 states last time. It did not, I think, actually qualify for the ballot last time around. This one did qualify. I believe his name is Tim Draper.
He's a Silicon Valley entrepreneur.
This case, it's a little bit of a mixed bag, because it basically would have California, Northern California, and Southern California. I would technically be right on the northern side of Southern California. And we would include some of the areas down south, like Orange County, Riverside, San Diego. The way they carve it out is that the coastal areas from Los Angeles, I think almost up to San Francisco, would be California. They would retain that designation. That state would probably instantly become, I think, maybe the most liberal state in the country. If you've got San Francisco and Hollywood, that would be a little bit crazy. I think what you would see is that Northern California would probably also be fairly liberal because of, it's stretching up to the Oregon border. It's really a mixed bag. My biggest concern is, logistically, it would be kind of a nightmare to try to figure out everything from water rights to, the
University of California and the CSU system. You know, there's so many things that would make that difficult.
Do you think it will pass? Do you think it'll pass?
Well, so here's the funny thing. A lot of people initially just dismiss it and say there's no way this could possibly happen. Well, those are the same people who said Donald Trump could never be elected and that said, you know, there's no way Britain will ever vote to leave the European Union. This is crazy enough that I think there's a small possibility that it might pass. And people are kind of a little bit worried that how do you fight this? If you're a California politician, if you fight it from a bipartisan manner and you say, look, you know, Republicans and Democrats agree, oppose the new California initiative, well, that might be enough that some people say, you know, if both sides don't like it, maybe we should give it a try. So I'm not exactly sure. The part of me would love to see it happen because I'd love to see the disruption that would happen and the way it would change things up. But I think on a national level, federal level, it really would be a little concerning to think, you know, suddenly you're going to be creating four new senators, and does that mean you're going to have four new Democrats? Does that mean that potentially maybe you split and you get two Republicans, two Democrats? You know, I don't know. It certainly is going to be interesting. Frankly, I have not decided quite how I'm going to vote on that yet myself.
Yeah. Well, and then, of course, some would say, let's just have California secede from the union, right?
Well, I have to be honest. Part of me says, if that was on the ballot, I might vote yes for that and then try to immigrate to Arizona.
Yes. We would certainly welcome you here. Well, let me go ahead and wrap up this conversation. Jonathan, we're just blessed by the work that you're doing in California and how, I mean, you're a beacon of hope. You're fighting the good fight, and you're just an example to all of us. I have, in the 5 years now that I've known you, I've really come to value your wisdom, to appreciate the work that you do, and to listen when you're speaking because you have much to say. You've taught me a lot about social media. I appreciate that. And when you mentioned happy hour earlier, I have to say now everyone knows what we do when we're at these national meetings, and they've been long days, that's what we try to do afterwards, to just take a break,
yes,
if you're not off in a cigar lounge somewhere.
Yes,
but anyway,
that's right.
Anyway, well, thank you so much for spending the time today with me today. And we will pray for your work. Pray for that 2943 to go down in flames, and just keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you so much, Kathy. And I will say there's a lot of times where I vacillate between extreme jealousy and envy of you and your team in Arizona, and other times being very grateful for the work you guys are doing, because even when we have tough days, it's a good reminder that there are at least some states that have not gone completely crazy yet.
Right, and we're going to pray we don't go completely crazy this year. Anyway, well, thank you so much. We'll be seeing you soon.
All right, thanks, Kathy. God bless.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Yeah, that was a fun conversation. So when are you guys going to publish it?
I don't know. Well, they've got whatever they're doing with iTunes to get it to be accepted, they're going to submit this. And then I've got some others scheduled for the week of July 9th. And so I don't know we're also doing several videos, and we're going to do a podcast series on beauty and choice, where we talk to different moms about the different school choices here, and then talk to adults who have gone through those different school choices and that kind of thing. So trying to get a lot wrapped up and see what we can get done.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm excited to see all the new stuff you guys are doing. So it'll be really fun to follow. I think there's going to be a little bit of a dearth in the viral video world now that Joseph is not in Washington, but I'm sure you guys can step up to the challenge and get some good news. So.
Yeah. Well, I went. I spoke at Patriot Academy the other night, and right before then, they had shown one of Joseph's videos.
Oh, nice.
Patriot Academy people. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, all right. Well, I will let you go. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Kathy. Have a good weekend. Until Micah said hello.
Bye bye. I will do. Bye bye.